Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. Today's host, Chris Kington Barker, and her guest is Dr. Sarah Bartlett, social worker and adjunct professor in the Psychology and Social Sciences departments at Cal Poly. They're going to discuss how there are good reasons for challenging age-related stereotypes and age bias, and the benefit and impact of people of all ages in these efforts. With all of that said, now let's join Chris and her guest. Over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Brad. According to the 2021 World Health Organization Global Report on ageism can change how we view ourselves, can pit one generation against another, can devalue or limit our ability to benefit from what younger and older populations can contribute, and can reduce opportunities for health, longevity, and well-being, while also having far-reaching economic consequences. My guest today is the perfect person for this topic, and I can't wait to learn more from her. I want to welcome you, Sarah Bartlett, for being here with me today. It's really a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with just some of the basics. When we talk about ageism, what is it?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways to define ageism, but basically it's stereotyping and discrimination against people based on age. We typically apply it to older adults, but people of all ages can actually be subjected to ageism, and it comes in many forms. So we can see ageism through beliefs that people have, attitudes, through social institutions or different kinds of systems, and also acts, you know, direct acts that we make against other people.
When we're seeing an increase in the impact of ageism today, and really a lot of what the show is going to be about, although I really invite callers to call in to talk about all levels of ageism that they've experienced, what kind of ageism are we seeing really growing in our society today, and perhaps not just limited to this society?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest differences that I've seen, even just in the time I've been working in the field of aging, is sort of pitting different generations against each other. Mm-hmm. If listeners are familiar with the OK Boomer, you know, trend that came a while ago, and even with the more recent presidential election, everyone, you know, all their comments about President Biden and the comments related to age and the disconnect that I know young people feel between maybe older politicians and younger generations. There's just like a lot of generational animosity, it almost seems, when in reality, you know, it would be so much better if generations could be learning from each other and working together. So that's one of the main changes that I've seen.
Historically, is that something that's new, or that has been really a long historical event?
I think we've seen it in the past. You know, like what comes to mind is the generational rift between like the hippies and the 60s and 70s and older generations and things like that. But I think that now it's so much more visible because of social media. It's just much more in everyone's purview. And these trends, these negative comments and things just travel more quickly because of, you know, how readily available it is online and things like that. I think, too, we've seen a shift from families that live in multi-generational households and, you know, people that are caring for older family members at home and that sort of thing, to where now a lot of families are more geographically distanced. And so that also can contribute, you know, and there's other parts of the world where it's very common to have, you know, grandma or great grandma staying at home and taking care of the grandkids while the parents work. And there's much more of a equal exchange of labor and value across generations. And that's not as common anymore in the U.S., at least.
There's a real separation by ages. Is there more likelihood that people will gravitate to hanging out with or really spending the bulk of their time with people that are of similar ages rather than collectively with multiple ages?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this is culturally based. So if it's more natural to see people of different ages interacting, then you might be more likely to do that. But in general, at least in the U.S., we see more of these age silos. And a lot of that is, there is some, you know, inherent, I guess, bias there, according to like social psychology principles of wanting to be around others who are the same. But a lot of it is culturally reinforced. So I'm always very aware of this, like in San Luis Obispo, where you have the assisted living facilities and then you have college dorms, you know, and in other countries, sometimes those are the same building. You know, you might have college students living on the same floor as maybe an older person that needs a little bit of assistance, but still has a lot to contribute. So as we build these age silos, I think it becomes more pronounced to where even if maybe you wanted to have a relationship with someone of a different age, the opportunities aren't really there like they would be.
When we talk about ageism and we're talking about, you know, whether or not that has an impact, are we talking about having stereotypes and making derogatory remarks about elder adults, say if it's a stereotype of ageism towards an older person? Or is it more than that that we're talking about with ageism?
Yeah, ageism comes in many different ways, shapes, and forms. And like with a lot of prejudice or different kinds of isms, we often first think of it as derogatory remarks, negative stereotypes, negative generalizations, things like that. But another form of ageism that I think is equally prolific is the invisibility of older adults. Older adults just not being seen as often in the media, unless it's in a frail or negative way. You know, not asking for older people's opinions, you know, just kind of this invisibility as if once you get to a certain age, you just don't exist anymore. And that actually is probably a more common form of ageism that I've had a lot of my clients tell me about, is I just feel like my kids don't care about me anymore, or value my opinions anymore. I go to the store and someone's talking to the person behind me in line instead of to me. I go to the doctor with my adult child and the doctor talks to my adult child as if I'm not there. I turn on the TV and the only time I see an older person, they're in a wheelchair, you know, so it's more of this invisibility that I think is just as damaging, but maybe not as apparent. Right. And then there's actually ageism that comes from, I would say, a more positive place. People don't necessarily mean it in a bad way, but I definitely have had my fair share of older adult clients that have said, like, why did they bother to open the door for me? I could get it myself. Or why did they, you know, offer to do something for me when I'm perfectly capable? Where people are very well-meaning, but it's still sending this message of, you know, just because you're older, I don't think you're capable. So that's another way that I see it.
So how do we also self-inflict ageism?
Yeah, that's probably one of the most damaging forms of ageism that exists, is that we self-inflict ageism. So, you know, ageism is something that if we're lucky enough, we will all be old enough to be open to, because that means we've lived to an age at which it might occur. But we're our worst critics. So, you know, when we take in, you know, through social learning theory, we realize that we learn social behavior by observing and imitating others. So if we're watching other people perform ageism, then we're oftentimes taking in those negative stereotypes and applying them to ourselves. So Becca Levy is a professor of psychology and epidemiology at Yale. And she wrote a really fascinating book called Breaking the Age Code that came out a few years ago. And it's basically a culmination of, you know, her lifetime of research on this. And she's done over 400 studies in 5 continents. So this is, you know, cross-cultural, cross-national as well. And she's found that people that have more positive age beliefs about themselves, that they live on average 7.5 more healthy, vital years than people that talk about more negative age-related images of themselves. So she goes so far as to test things like hearing, balance, mobility, fall risk, even forms of dementia, and says that people that have a much more positive view of aging, that aren't taking in all these negative stereotypes, almost seem more immune to these kinds of conditions. It's really fascinating.
Can you speak a little bit more about what is reflective of positive aging, or that self-image that is in a positive light as opposed to a negative?
So part of it is about looking at the benefits of age, like wisdom, life experience, emotional maturity, relationship, you know, being able to, you know, just perform better in interpersonal relationships, those sorts of things. And then also looking at not attributing things that happen to you based on age. So, for example, if you have a sore knee, rather than saying, oh, my knee hurts because I'm getting older, to kind of step back and think, well, my other knee doesn't hurt. It's the same age.
It's
so
the same
it must
body.
Be.
Yeah.
It's the same body. So let's attribute this to something else, and really separating the natural aging process from diseases that we get, or, you know, injuries or disabilities, so those sorts of things. So not attributing everything that happens to age alone really kind of provides people with this attitude of, I'm going to just keep keeping on. I'm going to address this issue, but I'm not going to succumb to it and just, you know, sort of become passive based on my age alone.
Talk a little bit about theories that are related to why we are so negative about aging.
Well, probably one of the most prominent ones, one of the first ones that I learned about, is terror management theory. And you're probably aware of that from the death anxiety literature. So this was based on the work of Ernest Becker. He originally, you know, started talking about this as an attempt to explain why we're so afraid of death, but it applies to aging too. And terror management theory, if you really pick apart the title itself, it'll tell you what it is. You have terror at the idea of getting older, because getting older means you're approaching death. So in order to manage that terror, that anxiety, you want to figure out a way to distance yourself from people that are getting closer to death. And so what we do is we other, you know, we create either externally or internally ways to make someone else seem like an other. They're different than us. And so we might develop these more negative stereotypes. We might ignore more positive examples because we're so afraid of aging ourselves that we want to create distance from someone who's older and from us. And a lot of that, again, comes from these negative images of aging that we see, and not enough positive ones. I have students in my classes that once they, you know, get to know older adults that are very vibrant and, you know, living their best lives, that the students say, you know, I'm not afraid of aging anymore. I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. But if we don't have those role models or those examples, then we might have that fear. And so terror management theory says that we try to create distance from that which we're afraid of, which in this case would be older people. So that's one of them. There's other ones too.
Yeah. Yeah. And does that speak to how there's so much emphasis in some societies about staving off looking like you're getting older? I mean, it used to be that, for instance, cosmetic surgeries and those kinds of things really were things that people in their later years, people who were older, were seeking. And now we're seeing that, you know, I have a friend who's a plastic surgeon and does a lot of cosmetics, and a good portion of his business is women and men who are in their 30s and 40s. And that just blows
my
mind.
Yeah. Yeah, that blows my mind too, but I guess it's not incredibly surprising, just because, I mean, if I, being a social worker, I kind of tend towards looking at systems related issues as well. And I do see that with capitalism, you know, always trying to promote the next product, or, you know, we have to create, we as a society have to create, quote, problems in order to be able to market solutions. And so trying to convince people that they need to look younger and younger and younger, that's just going to expand the market for products that do that. One expression I used to say a lot that I've been trying really hard to get out of my own vocabulary is, you look good for your age.
I know.
which is really, I mean, it's seen as a compliment, right? But when you say that, you're basically saying that looking younger equals beauty. And why isn't looking older beauty? Why isn't beauty apparent at every age? So
exactly. Yeah. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. We're in pledge drive right now, and this show, like so many others on KCBX, are supported not only by the volunteers who bring them to you, but we couldn't do what we do, and they wouldn't be able to even air to you if it wasn't for your support for this radio station. So please pick up the phone, get out your computer, make sure that even if it's $5, that you give us some support for continuing this. This is such an important station for the Central Coast, and we really want to continue to bring you everything that we can. The voice you hear with me today is Dr. Sierra Bartlett, social worker and adjunct professor in psychology and social sciences department in Cal Poly. We'll be talking more about her work there. And we're also talking on a broader topic of ageism. If you want to share with us some examples of ageism that you've noticed in your community or in your world, we'd be glad to hear about it and talk about it on air. You can call our main number at 805-549-8855, and we welcome hearing from you. You know, when you talk about you look good for your age, it's interesting because I entered into the work world of mental health and having to be a very responsible adult when I was 19, and I looked very young. And so I fought ageism at that point because I was very immature looking. And had to cast myself as being very adult and very professional. And so I had to prove myself there. I'm 72 now. And so the comment that I get from a lot of folks is, oh, you look great for your age. You know, and it's like, oh my gosh, my age has followed me. I was still getting carded for drinks when I was in my late 30s. So I'd be out at a business lunch and they'd be carding me, which was kind of a little bit of an awkward moment when I'm with a business client. And, you know, so ageism really does come across. I could understand the carding if they thought I was under 21, but it's something that exists all over the place.
It is. And there's actually a term for ageism that is aimed at younger people. It's called adultism. And, you know, younger people absolutely experience it as well. And I really resonate with your story because, I mean, I've been a geriatric social worker since I was 24. You know, I got my master's at 24. Yeah. And so I've, you know, heard similar comments. You don't look old enough to be doing that. I remember in my 30s, I actually cut my hair in such a way that I thought would make me look older, so people would take me seriously. And now I'm growing it out because, you know, who cares, you know? So, but yeah, I agree that we make so many preconceived judgments just based on age alone. And two, people look so different, you know.
We do.
Life experience, genetics, you know, one thing I do in my classes when we start to talk about the physical aspects of aging is I put two images on the screen side by side. I put a picture of Mother Teresa and Goldie Hawn. And the first thing is most students don't know who Goldie Hawn is anymore. They always recognize Mother Teresa, which is good. But they're both 69 in the photo. And I ask, you know, how old do you think these ladies are? And, you know, there's like a sometimes up to a 40-year age difference of what this, and you know, it's the idea we all come from different walks of life, whether that's privilege or oppression, or whether that's the jobs that we do or the access that we have or our values. You know, what's important to us? Is it maintaining a certain skin tone, or is it, you know, being out and having other priorities? And so not only is age just a number and we should stop tying it to what we look like, but you can't even really judge how old someone is anymore.
No.
You know, it depends on so many different things.
Or how vibrant they are, or where they're where they're involved in life. I think, you know, and you probably can speak more to this certainly than I can, but the idea that people are still very viable sexually, that they're still interested in being, in learning, continuing to learn. It's not an old dog can't learn new tricks. You know,
right.
It's that I've met some of the most open and willing to learn new ways of thinking from folks who are older. And it's just a new way of looking, or the opposite of young people can't be smart enough because they haven't had enough life experience to really know something. And I've met some of the oldest souls in young bodies of, wow, you know, how'd you come up with that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, AARP has their Disrupt Aging, campaign based on the book by Joanne Jenkins. Mm-hmm. And they are constantly trying to, you know, promote that idea that we have this image of aging that it's about decline. And oftentimes it's actually a period of tremendous growth, you know, that there's so much vibrancy, knowledge, experience, things like that to gain. And like you say, to kind of get away from these preconceived ideas that we have about aging and sexuality or physical health. We work at Cal Poly with an organization called Senior Planet, which, you know, I can probably talk more about in a little bit, but it's a program of AARP, and they actually have a podcast called Aging Rewired. And it's about seniors and technology is kind of how they phrase it. And I was just listening to an episode about older adults and sexuality the other day, and about dating apps and, you know, online dating and things like that. So it's just a matter of kind of getting that side of aging out there that so often isn't seen.
We talk a lot about language, you know, when it comes to different isms, racism, and how do we need to be more attentive to our language around ageism?
We could be doing so much better, you know, just with language alone. So first and foremost, you'll notice I'm saying older adults. I'm not saying the elderly. And there's actually been a movement within the gerontology community to stop using the phrase elderly. Not that there was necessarily anything wrong with it to begin with. You know, we talk about adolescents, right? Or teens. But over the years, elderly has just been associated with frailty only so much that now it's almost seen as a negative term. So we've started, you know, in academia, for example, there's guidelines for the academic journals that you are not to use the word elderly. They will correct you on that. You say older adults, just like we have middle-aged adults and younger adults. It's just a different chronological stage of adulthood. So even something as simple as that, you hear a lot with the baby boomers, they call it the gray tsunami.
Yes.
And it's like, why do we have to associate something with something negative? Even though, yes, there are tremendous economic implications that revolve around the baby boomers. But, you know, why don't we just say this tremendous, you know, cohort of older people? You know, like, why associate it with something negative? Another thing I hear a lot, and again, this speaks to aging as being, you know, not always having negative intentions, is a lot of people that are younger will refer to older people as cute. Oh, they're so cute. Or look at that cute little old couple. Obviously, they mean it in a very positive way. But when we speak like that, we're doing what's called infantilizing. So we are comparing an older person to like a child, you know, or an infant, which is very disrespectful. So even sometimes meaning it positively, really thinking about what that could communicate. And I see it in care homes a lot too, where the staff will call someone sweetie.
Yes.
And, you know, unless the person likes that, you know, maybe they enjoy that term, but we don't want to assume that because that's, you know, that's a form of elder speak, we call it, you know, where you're speaking to someone in a certain way just because of their age alone. So those are just a few. I have lots of examples of where language can come into play. Senior moment. I'm having a senior moment.
Right.
You know, I've had senior moments since I was a teenager, you know, but we don't ever say that, you know, so why connect it to being a senior? So yeah, just really being mindful of our language.
Yeah. And I think that it really does come across universally. I once had a guy as I was going through a drive through Pollo Loco who referred to me as hun. And I just went, no, you don't get it. I'm not your hun. You know, what? Why would you even call me that? That is so rude.
Exactly.
But he was shocked because I think he thought he was being, you know, he was treating me endearingly.
Right. Yeah. It's we talk a lot these days about intent versus impact. And, you know, someone can have a good intention, but the impact can still be negative. And so, you know, it's a matter of not, you know, coming down too harshly on that person, but educating them, you know, educating them so that the next time they might think differently about the words that they use.
So the first part is awareness, to really start to be aware of if we are referring to people as cute, or maybe the awareness is really about just being aware of where our biases are or where our fear is. Are we afraid of getting older? Do we have concerns about it? Are we obsessed with that for ourselves? I mean, that's something that we can all evaluate. Is that something that we avoid at all possible? You know, how much money are we spending on avoiding that?
Absolutely.
How does it reflect out in our world?
Awareness is such a big piece. You know, Becca Levy gives us very simple exercise to help you understand, like, what is your own awareness or what is your own sensitivity to age? And she says, just kind of clear your mind and think of five different images of aging, whatever that means for you, and write it down. And a lot of times, most of them are negative. You know, and for that to be a starting point of, wow, why is it when I just think of aging, it's all negative? How can I start to change that? So just becoming more aware of these, like you say, implicit biases that you are carrying within yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What, you know, something too is for us to really think about how many friendships or how many relationships do we have with other people of other generations? So that are not our family. You know, obviously, in our families, we'll get thrown together with multiple generations, whether we want to or not. But how many, you know, how many neighbors do we communicate with and have a relationship with who are of a different generation? How many friends do we have that are of a different generation? And I think that sometimes that's even harder when we start doing things like working from home more. Or we had a period of time where we weren't going into offices and not going out during COVID. And so it was even harder to be in situations where you would artificially be thrown together with people that you wouldn't normally hang out with. So you wouldn't get to know, wow, that, you know, that person is somebody that I actually like being around, that I wouldn't have chosen as an ally or a friend.
That is such an excellent point. Yeah. And I think intergenerational relationships are such a key for combating ageism. And I really appreciate your point about COVID, where we were all more isolated in general, but there was also this very wide reaching image of, you know, older people being so much more sensitive to COVID. And so we were really isolating off older adults on purpose to protect them.
Yeah.
You know, but the paradox of that was that people were getting more and more age siloed and more and more isolated. So
absolutely. And we're going to take just a quick break. I'm going to send it back over to you, Brad, and we'll be back.
And thank you very much. I've got more of Central Coast Voices coming up. Ahead today on KCBX, Latino USA is coming up at 2 o'clock, followed by Fresh Air at 3. Then it's Marketplace at 4. Right now, let's return to Chris Kington Barker and her guests on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Chris.
Thank you, Brad. And Dr. Sarah Barklett is a social worker, adjunct professor in psychology and social science departments at Cal Poly. And our topic is ageism, the more socially acceptable ism that we're trying to talk with you about maybe changing, at least in your world, and having a ripple effect into many others. And Sarah, I want to go back to, you were talking about the senior planet, and I want to get back to that, but I also want to start with, in 2022, you co-authored an article that was published in the Journal of Intergenerational Relationships entitled, "They're Not All Grumps, a Qualitative Process of Examination of Two Intergenerational Service Learning Programs." And it was based on your work with students in psychology of aging classes at Cal Poly. Talk about the two different approaches and the outcomes with both students and the older adults, and kind of some of the learning that came through in the article that you wrote. It was really interesting.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. I'd love to do that. I mean, I think the first point I want to make is that the field of intergenerational relationships does exist.
Yeah.
And it's basically speaking to what you had mentioned before the break, that it's really important for people of different generations to interact with each other, and not just people from your own family, but to see people as unique individuals over and above age. And so there's a whole journal devoted to research on this, both formal and informal intergenerational relationships. And that's where the projects that we're doing at Cal Poly fit in. So in my psychology of aging class, I was really kind of trying to figure out, how can I impress upon, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-olds the different aspects of age other than the frailty, you know, that maybe they were coming into this class with. And was fortunate enough to come across and be introduced to Skye Bergman, who probably some of you know as the producer of a wonderful film called Lives Well Lived, about many different local older adults in our community that, you know, are doing very amazing, vibrant things. And really speaks to not only the historical context, but also the present context of aging around San Luis Obispo County, California, and the U.S. And so I wanted to develop a project with Skye based on her film, but really allowing students to be able to connect with older adults in our community that are similar to those that were featured in the film, you know, so kind of based on this film as a jumping off point, but to really get to know someone of a different generation that's not from within their own families. So Skye and I developed the Lives Well Lived program, and we've been doing that for, gosh, it's probably been 7-8 years now through this Cal Poly class. And it's called service learning. So what that basically means is that as part of the class, students are required to go out into the community and to engage with a group, a population that they might not normally be exposed to. So what the article was about was the fact that we know intergenerational relationships work. We know that service learning works. That's been established for years. But how much of it do we need? What kind of it do we need? And so I was fortunate enough to be able to teach two sections of the same psychology of aging class. And so we did a different service learning program in each of the two classes to really see, like, what are the nuances of this? So in one section of the class, students would go out and have lunch at our congregate meal sites. You know, so there's Meals That Connect does a wonderful job of, you know, providing lunch for different older adults throughout the community. And all my students were asked to do is go out and have lunch a couple times, just sit around, talk, get to know people. So that was one option. And then in the other section, we did a more formal program where they actually were paired with one older adult one-on-one and had the opportunity to interview each other about their lives. So they had three personalized two-hour meetings where the students would ask their older adult partner similar interview questions to what Sky had asked people for her film. Mm-hmm. But then also it gave the older adult a chance to interview the student, because one thing we know about ageism is we want everything to be bi-directional. You know, there's too many programs that are go out and interview an older person. No, we wanted the older people to also get a sense of what it's like to be a younger person. And so they would really get to know each other. And what the research found is that the student, they all showed a decrease in ageism. So everyone seemed to have more positive views about ageism after engaging in service learning. But the students that were in the Lives Well Lived project that really got to know someone better at an individual level, they had less fear of aging themselves. They actually, some of them said they were looking forward to it. They definitely had more of a sense of wanting to continue having intergenerational relationships in the future. And many of them went on to maintain this relationship with their older adult partner throughout their remaining years at Cal Poly. I've had older adult partners that came to their graduation, you know, that they would go to the PAC, to go to the opera. They would, you know, continued to have these friendships. And so students that were in that group, really, this became a part of their new, you know, kind of identity, that it was okay and even welcomed to have these cross-generational friendships. So that was really important, that really it's the individual relationships that we form that help us to see all those other aspects of why we like someone and just see past age, you know, or even how age accentuates what we like about the person. So those are the main differences.
Do you do that class every semester, or how frequently do you do your class on aging?
Yeah, we offer psychology of aging most quarters at Cal Poly, sometimes more than one section per quarter. It kind of depends. But we try to do the Lives Well Lived program 2 to 3 times a year. And we have different partners. We have some local retirement communities and senior apartment complexes that we work with. And then during COVID, we actually started working with Senior Planet because it wasn't possible to be out, you know, in person. So we do also have a virtual version of the program where the students do pretty much the same thing, but online through Zoom instead of in person.
And the difference between in person and online in terms of the engagement that they have, is there any?
There is. Unfortunately, I also studied that, and I was hoping that there would be no difference, because my hypothesis was actually that students are so used to forming relationships through virtual means that it wouldn't really make a difference to them if it was on Zoom or in person. But what our study showed was that there was a little bit of a difference, that there was a greater, again, everybody showed a decrease in ageism, but there was a greater effect for the in-person version of the program.
And for both the young person and for the older person?
I've only studied the student side. Okay. So, yeah. And it's interesting on the older adult side, because I have given like evaluations to the older adults. They all love the program. But the ones that do it through Senior Planet, they love it because they're already engaged in an online community. The whole purpose of Senior Planet is it's an online social community, social and learning community for older adults. And so I think the effect, if I had to say, for the older adults online versus in person is probably pretty similar. Because of the modality. But for students, they did say it would have been really neat to have gotten to, you know, be in person for this.
There are some European countries that you mentioned when we started this show, that you have the Cal Poly students and you have student housing, and the you have like when you have a campus town, there's an accentuation on the young folks and almost like a city within a city. And then you have senior living communities, as they're referred to, where you've got people that can age in place and different levels of needs as they maybe become more frail, that can assist them more positively. But in different cities in Europe and different campus towns, actually they work to bring those two things together. And they have students that co-house with seniors, with older adults. And the purpose is for having an intergenerational thriving between the two communities. One, for the seniors who really need to spend time studying and need to and really want to have a roommate that is going to allow the accentuation to be on that rather than maybe activities and the kind of things that would get unfocused in their residence. It's been helpful for them. Mm-hmm. For the older person, it's companionship, you know, mm-hmm. and being able to have a student who isn't going to be distracting but actually is comfortable to be living with. And the co-housing between them has been a boon for both. It also reduces the cost for both in living. If the older person is working during the day or is even early retirement, there's some benefits in that. There's benefits in if they have pets, of one being able to watch it while the other one is out of the area traveling. I mean, there is just so much benefit. It's, do we have an emphasis in this country on those kinds of situations? Are you aware of us really encouraging that or looking toward those kinds of opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, it does exist. I don't think to the same extent as in Europe, but I know I was contacted several years ago by a university in Lincoln, Nebraska, that was going to be doing this. So I know that there are some colleges that have tried this model, but it's certainly not very common and not the norm. And I think you bring up so many of the great benefits, you know, financially and then lifestyle-wise, mm-hmm. and then also mentorship, you know, I think is a big piece of it too. Some of them that I've read about, you think, okay, well, how do they group people then, you know? Yeah. And it's grouped around interests. So you have like the music floor where it's okay to practice your violin because everyone else is into music, or you might have an art floor, you know, like different floors where mm-hmm. people have shared interests, which helps with just living together, but then also the mentorship. And, you know, one piece of this ageism idea of older people being invisible is that they feel, and I don't mean to generalize, but I have heard some people say, I have so much wisdom and knowledge I want to share and no one wants to hear it.
Yes.
You know, so if you have like a nursing floor and you have someone that's been a nurse for 50 years, I mean, what a wonderful source of knowledge and experience for someone who's just going to become a nurse. So I think that's another big piece of it too. So yeah, it does exist. I don't think it's common, mm-hmm. But there, I think we would all really benefit from that, definitely.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, because I also do education with people around end of life care. One of the things that I hear frequently from people who are older is the same thing: the invisibility. I feel like I'm disappearing. I feel mm-hmm. like I've become invisible. I feel like nobody sees me anymore. And it's that nobody hears me anymore either. Mm-hmm. Their stories are no longer, nobody asks them about them. Nobody really hears what they have to say, or they don't perceive that anybody cares about it. Mm-hmm. And the idea that even when they're very ill, seriously ill, or even terminally ill, that they still can be resourceful and whole. And that's so for people as we age. You know, we have, even if our bodies are less able than they were when we were in our 20s and 30s, it's about how do we still feel vibrant? How do we still engage and feel like we're relevant, but just in slightly different ways? And
absolutely,
being able to be seen as relevant by people who are of a different generation, I think is really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And, you know, this process of life review of, you know, sort of wanting to look over your life and see the cohesiveness in it and how you've benefited others and your life's purpose and all of that is something that is universal. Everybody, you know, almost everybody engages in life review. The only difference is how much other people are willing to sit around and listen and, yeah, and benefit from that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of times we say, you know, what was old is new again. Mm-hmm. There are things that recycle back through. I mean, you know, just in the years that I've been around, I've seen things recycle through and it's like, wow, that's a cool new thing. And it's like, yeah, no, we did that in the 60s. No,
right.
We did that
just
in the 70s.
Maybe repackaged a little different, but it's yeah, the same. Yeah.
Oh, that's been done before. But, you know, yeah, it was cool then. It's cool now. I love it. Love seeing it come back. Mm-hmm. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio. And if you've recently joined us for today's show and want to enjoy the entire broadcast, it'll be available on our website at kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices, and you will find this show along with many other shows to choose from. The voice you hear with me today belongs to Dr. Sarah Bartlett, social worker and adjunct professor in psychology and social sciences at Cal Poly. And our topic has been ageism. And Sarah, if someone wanted to really read about what we're talking about today and even do a deeper dive into it, if someone wanted to, you know, was saying, okay, I need to adjust my own thinking about growing older, do you have some books that you recommend?
Yeah, definitely. So one of them is the one I mentioned by Becca Levy. It's called Breaking the Age Code: How Your Beliefs About Aging Determine How Long and Well You Live. So I would highly recommend that one. That one really changed my own thoughts about ageism. Hmm. And not only does it go over all of her research and really prove a point for how important it is not to self-inflict ageism, but she also has something she outlines called the ABC model, which is a way of combating ageism. And I think it's interesting that you mentioned awareness. That's the A in the ABC model. So it's awareness, blame, like, where do we place the blame, and really externalizing the blame more on systems and capitalism and things like that. And then challenge. How do we challenge ageism in our own families, in our own communities, and systemically? And she gives a lot of practical advice for how to engage with each of those aspects of the ABC model. So that's a really great one. Disrupt Aging, as I mentioned, by Joanne Jenkins of AARP, is another way of just sort of re-envisioning how we can look at age from a much more positive lens. So I would recommend that as well. And then there's I think she's a sociologist. Her name is Ashton Applewhite. And she, if you want a more humorous take on ageism, she has her book, This Chair Rocks, and also a blog that goes along with that. I think it's called Yo, Is This Ageist? That, you know, people can kind of write in and give different examples. But she does some great work on ageism with more of a humorous take. And then she also looks a lot at intersectionality, which is something we didn't really talk about. But there are definitely people that it's called multiple jeopardy, right? They are experiencing ageism, but they're also experiencing racism or homophobia or, you know, other forms.
Talk a little bit about that, because that's compounded. Everyone can be experiencing ageism, but then it's overarching something else. Can you speak more to the folks that do have that and how?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, there's some folks that just because there's, you know, race, privilege, oppression, these kinds of things in our society might have already suffered from multiple forms of prejudice throughout their lives. And as they age, they might be experiencing ageism on top of that. So mm-hmm. one example might be if a certain racial or economic group, they have not had proper access to health care throughout their life. So when they get older, they're going to maybe have more what we call secondary aging, more of these disease-related impairments than someone that has had great access to healthcare and good nutrition and access to green spaces and, you know, hasn't been around environmental environmental racism and pollution. So just the aging experience can be that much worse for someone who has already, you know, experienced this throughout their lives. And then there's the idea that you can be discriminated against from within your own community based on age, and then from outside communities based on your other identity. So one example I've seen with this is with the LGBTQ community, where throughout life, when people were younger, they might have experienced homophobia or other forms of hate based on certain aspects of that identity. And then when they get older, they might experience ageism from within the LGBTQ community, as well as, you know, hate based on their maybe sexual identity from other older people. So now it's not based on age. It might be older adult to older adult, but it's related to that other aspect of their mm-hmm. identity. So for that particular community, SAGE USA is an amazing national nonprofit that has a lot of great programming, educational programs, advocacy for the LGBTQ plus older community. And they've found a lot of, you know, homophobia or transphobia within care facilities and yeah. things like that. So, you know, that just really complicates the picture for some people.
Well, we'd be remiss if we didn't speak to the fact that women experience ageism probably more than men do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you see that a lot, the beauty industry exclusively geared towards women, if you really think about it. Yeah. And this idea that as men age, they become more powerful, or they accumulate more wealth, or they're in more, you know, positions of power. They're distinguished. Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that doesn't cross over to women at all.
No. No, not easily. Mm-mm. Yeah. They can get cute.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
talk a little bit about you were going to mention a website for folks to go to for a survey that still exists around aging.
Yeah, you know, this is a really exciting time to be talking about this topic, because SLO County is currently working on their master plan on aging. And so they are doing a needs assessment survey where they're really trying to get firsthand knowledge of what are the needs and the wants from our older adults in SLO County. And they're going to use the information from this to devise a plan of what we as a community here in San Luis Obispo can do to address these needs within the next 3 to 5 years. So they're accepting surveys through the end of the month and just trying to accumulate as many voices as possible. They have two different surveys. One is for older adults or people with disabilities, where they reflect on what are their own needs. And then they have another survey for people who are caregivers or who are caring for someone who, you know, might have some needs in the community. And I think we're going to link to those links for people to fill out the survey, or I can give the URL now if you want me to.
Yeah, if you can just give the website.
Sure. Yeah. So I'll give the one first for older adults themselves, since we're talking about, you know, being powerful members of an older community. And it's tinyurl.com/59. The letter P is in Paul. The letter H is in hello. 76, B is in boy, 2. So, you know, https://all that stuff, tinyurl.com/59 PH76B2. So that's the one to express your needs, what it is that you would like to see our county do better. And this is in areas of housing, transportation, healthcare, mental, emotional support, you know, all of these sorts of things.
And are these used for instance, doing government projects or planning or for grants or programs?
All of the above.
All of
yes.
The above.
Everything
okay.
You just said. Also, you know, where our community-based organizations should be maybe focusing, directing our efforts. Yes. So
their,
it's meant to
for
be.
Their services.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I
community-wide.
I have a question for you, too. What should employers be looking at in their own businesses around ageism?
Well, definitely not to engage in it. ageism in the workplace is actually illegal. You know, mm-hmm. The Age Discrimination Act was passed back in the 70s. And that applies to anyone 40 and over. So one thing I think employers should keep in mind is not to utilize age as a condition of employment, whether or not to hire someone, not to ask questions about when you graduated or how old you are, anything like that. And that older workers actually, from the research, do very, very well in the workplace, actually better sometimes for things like attendance, responsibility, things like that, that older workers are actually a huge asset in the workplace. And so to be wary of either directly or indirectly assuming that someone should retire just because they reach a certain chronological age.
Or they're too slow or couldn't keep it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So give them a shot at an interview.
Yeah, exactly.
If they've got the qualifications and they've got the experience.
Right.
Sarah,
I
want to thank you for being on this show today. I know this hour went fast. There was a lot we talked about. We could talk for a lot longer. We'll have to do this again sometime. And can people sign up for your classes?
Only if you go to Cal Poly.
If they're in Cal Poly, you can.
Yeah,
so if you're a Cal Poly student, you might want to consider this. I want to thank Sarah Bartlett, social worker, adjunct professor in the Psychology and Social Services Department of Cal Poly. And thank you, Brad, for joining me today.
A pleasure, as always.
Yes. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining us today on Central Coast Voices.
Thank you for listening to this best of episode of Central Coast Voices, which we originally broadcasted in September. The show about emergency preparedness that was scheduled for today will run in March. You can tune in next week for a new Central Coast Voices episode with Chris Kingston Barker. Support for KCBX comes from Moran Brothers Automotive, who believe that a free press and independent news reporting are essential for every successful democracy. You can reach Moran Brothers Automotive at morinbros.com. Support also comes from Hospice Slo County, the non-medical volunteer hospice and community grief center. Hospice Slo County helps those who are facing a life-limiting illness, end of life, or grief, and you can learn more at hospiceslo.org. This is KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo and KNBX HD1 San Ardo, streaming live and all the time at kcbx.org. And here's just a reminder that on our website at kcbx.org, we have many resources available for you, including our community calendar. You could submit your nonprofit or community service item to share under the calendar tab at kcbx.org. One example of those events: the Cal Poly Winter Jazz Concert takes place on Friday, February 21st at 7:30 p.m. at Cal Poly's Performing Arts Center. The show will include performances from the University Jazz Band, the Vocal Jazz Ensemble, and the Cal Poly Jazz Combos. For more information, visit the website at music.calpoly.edu or go to the calendar tab on our website at kcbx.org. Be sure to stay tuned. A new episode of Latino USA is coming up next from 2 to 3.
The Road Home is a weekly radio show of music rooted in American tradition. And that's a tradition built on musical influences from all over the world. I'm Marisa Waddell. Tune in every Thursday night for The Road Home, Americana music, its roots, and its branches, with plenty of new releases and lots of favorites, too. That's Thursday nights from 6:30 to 8, right after All Things Considered, for any time on demand at kcbx.org.